Good morning. When you're ready to proceed, please introduce yourself and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of. Each of you will have 15 minutes for presentation of your initial argument. 5 minutes is reserved to appellate counsel if you choose to use that for rebuttal. And when you're ready to proceed, you may go ahead.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Dan Kohler, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Hernandez, in this matter. This appeal is not a challenge to the constitutionality of the Danko statute itself, or the district court's ability to issue and impose and enforce Danko orders. It's specifically to the Danko that was issued in this case, and even more specifically, to the exceptions that were listed to the broad no-contact provisions in the amended Danko. As the court's aware, there were two Dankos issued. One of them was a broad no-contact that also included a specific residence. Then we have the amended Danko that explicitly says that appellant may return to reside at his house. Right below the provision that follows that same exception format, the where and why that you get in these Dankos, where it says except.
But even if we don't care if he went back to his house, how do you set aside the fact that he was, no question about it, not to have contact with three protected individuals?
And that was what the district court concluded.
I mean, he wasn't found in violation of being in his house. It was having contact with the individuals.
And at a minimum, the face of the Danko told him that he may return to reside at that house, an exception to the general Danko.
I understand and I agree, and I don't have any trouble with him being at the house. I don't find that to be a problem. I have a problem with the fact that he had contact with three individuals. I don't care if it was in the mall. I don't care if it was next door neighbor. He had contact with them.
And all of those circumstances are different than the one that was explicit in the Danko itself. If the issue in this case was, if it was just a no contact order and the individuals came to a home they previously had access to, used a key and went in, because clearly there was no duress going on in this case. And the issue was, you know, can you constitutionally kick somebody out of their home because there's a no-contact order in place and the protected individuals are almost using that offensively? But that's not the question here. That would be a case where the Danko left it unclear. There were no exceptions. But here there actually is that exception. You read the order and it says you may return to reside. And a person of common intelligence.
Well, let me ask you this, a person of more than common intelligence, because you're licensed to practice law. If he was in his house and he called them on the phone, would you construe that as a violation?
Absolutely. It said he may return to reside. And I looked through the case law to see if I could find a case where protected individuals went to somebody's home where they had the right to be, and that's never made it to an appeal so far as I can tell. But there's lots of cases where people are making contact, direct or indirect, through email, through phone. And at that point, it doesn't matter where they are. I mean, I think that's clearly excluded by this Danko, but it's that exception, and it follows that same where and why format. Like, if the box right above this exception had been checked, saying except with police presence to obtain certain items, and Mr. Hernandez throws a punch in the presence of the officers, like, you could argue that that was a Danko violation. It's clearly its own crime, but that's also a Danko violation. But again, it's that same format. If he's there with the police, the state can't charge him with a Danko violation for having contact because he's complying with the order. There's a sheriff present and he's there to get his personal belongings. And here it says you can return to this address to reside.
Can I mean, because it seems like there's two things required under the order that's provided for in the order. And that is, one, he can return to his house and he may reside. But the other, which which I think the facts seem to indicate he understood, is that he was to have no contact with these protected people. And I think the reasonable inference that he understood that can be drawn from the fact he was hiding in his underwear behind the couch when the police arrived.
I disagree with that. I mean, so, they were there to execute an arrest warrant. I mean, he's not a natural born citizen of the United States, and we weren't deporting citizens back then like we are now. But I mean, he knew they were coming to arrest him, so he wasn't hiding from them. You can't. It's not the only inference you can make in this case, is okay, that he was hiding because okay, he didn't think he was supposed to be there.
But there were two things required under the order, and I mean, as an attorney looking at this, or as a legal person looking at this, he clearly violated the second part of the order, which was that he had no contact with these people.
Well, and conceptually, I would look at it in the opposite way. Like, the way we briefed it is that there's the prohibitions. It's the Danko says one thing, no contact. And then you've got the exceptions. Just like when you go home to collect personal belongings, you can't have contact normally, but when you've got a sheriff with you, you get that one trip to pick up your personal belongings, and then you're off the property again. The prior Danko had two restrictions, no contact, and also could not even go to the residence. So the protected persons could have gone to Disney World under the old Danko, and if he went home for any reason, that's also a Danko violation. And that's why it gets so tricky, especially when we have to look at it as strictly as we would look at a statute. Because here the judge was telling him, you know, you have the right to reside here. And a person of common intelligence would read that as failure to retreat, no need to retreat, the castle doctrine, where you're restricted from doing certain things in one location, but when you're in your home, you've got some extra rights. He doesn't have a duty to retreat from his own home, especially when the judge told him he had the right to reside there. And that's where...
So if a court order said you are prohibited from having any handguns, you can go home and live where you describe your residence. Anyone can say they're not in violation of the second prong of the court order because, gee, they're in their house. I realize this is a Danko situation, but I'll be honest, I find some of your argument a little absurd, and I realize you're trying to say that a common person is going to be confused, but it just seems the facts don't lend to that mode of thought as it relates to this situation.
Yeah, and it either is or it isn't on its face. But there's that clear judge told me I could return to reside at my home. And if they show up at my home, am I supposed to leave? I mean, not even going into the policy reasons behind why we have Dankos. But again, clearly this wasn't a situation, and he couldn't argue, I kidnapped him, but I ran home. That's my safe harbor. Or I threatened to hurt the kids unless she came over. I mean, that's not that situation either. It's that he's literally residing in his home, and they came. And the judge's order said...
Just the common issue that always comes up when a Danko is issued is parties seem to decide that they can...
write their own order.
No, and we see it a lot, and that's why I'm specifically steering away from, because that's a huge nest of worms.
I mean, believe me, I'm sympathetic to your client, but my colleagues may convince me otherwise, but I'm trying to follow where you're going with this.
And the Phipps case was cited by both the district court and counsel, the right not to be convicted based on a vague order for protection. In that case, he was specifically excluded from his family home. And he was there anyways. He was actually, I think he was there before they got home. And this court said, like, that in this case, there was no contact, quote, without qualification or exception. And that's the kicker here, is because that exception was put in there with that may return to reside. It's what muddies the waters to the point
but
where...
But you're asking us to reasonably read this order as saying... You can have contact as long as it's in the house. If you go outside the house, you can't have contact. Is that, I mean, that's why I think
that's
we're having
really
trouble.
That's not really a logical way of looking at it.
Right.
No, and the way we're, and the
so,
way.
And I don't know, I mean, you would have to show that a reasonable person would read it that way, and I guess that's where we're coming up.
Well, and it's the ambiguity that there's more than one potential interpretation, because that would be a constitutional due process problem. And the other reading isn't that he has the right to have contact in his home necessarily. It's that he's got the right to reside there. He doesn't have that affirmative duty to avoid contact. I mean, and it could get very sticky. I mean, if he opens the door to his home and the three protected persons are standing on his doorstep.
You don't have to recite all of the possible facts. That's not; those aren't the facts here.
No, but I mean, and it just underscores where you've got that uncertainty because of the language in this case and the history that led up to the issuance of an order that actually went from you don't have the right to go to this property.
There's no evidence
to,
in this case, is there, that he suggested to them that they needed to leave and leave promptly, or that he did anything to try to get them to leave?
No, nothing like that at all.
So he's just standing on the idea, I can be in my house, judge said so, and I can forget the fact that there's another part of that order which says, but I can't have any contact with you and you're here. That just
reading that language as an exception, as narrow as it needs to be, right to reside. It doesn't say he has the right to return home and make phone calls, because we're all aware that there's other exceptions put into Danko's. You have the right to make phone calls for the purposes of coordinating parenting time, or other exceptions for types of contact. And we know that's when Danko's start to get really tricky, is when there's these limited exceptions written in to the broad no contact, direct or indirect. And this is the first one I've seen that has gone this far. And it is reasonable to interpret it to say that you do have the right to reside at your home. And if the protected people show up, you don't have the right to leave. And that's all we're asking for in this case.
The right to leave or the obligation to leave?
Obligation. He doesn't have the obligation to leave his home.
But he may have an obligation to tell those folks they're not allowed to be here, because I'm not allowed to have any contact with you.
Well, and again, that's contact.
A reasonable reading. I mean, that's a reasonable reading.
Well, telling them to leave is also contact. We've got cases where somebody, if the protected person called him, and he picked up the phone and said, "Stop calling me," I mean, that's a Danko violation.
Well, but he knew that who was on the other end of the phone when he picked it up. If somebody shows up to the door, and you're saying that this order would be violated if these protected people showed up at the door and he said, "You can't be here," that would be a contact?
Under the state's reading of it, I think that would absolutely be the case.
That would go to a trier of fact, though.
Yeah.
All right.
But yes, in this case, I think that it is absolutely reasonable. A person of common intelligence could assume, under this order, I can't have contact, but I am not obligated to leave my home. The same way I would be obligated.
So I will have all kinds of contact when I'm in the home.
Well, and again, nothing that he initiated. And that is always a sore spot here, but I think it makes a difference when he's actually in his own home and he's looking at an order that said that he may return to reside. And that's why we're asking this court to reverse the conviction due to a vague and ambiguous Danko order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Culler.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Callie Gardner, and I represent the respondent in this case. I was also asked to handle this appeal as I was a previous assistant Mille Lacs County attorney and familiar with these matters. The issue of this case here is an exception in a domestic abuse no contact order, as Your Honors have pointed out. As the district court Judge Quinn in this matter correctly analyzed, the exception is to one of the rules. Based on the canons of construction of this domestic abuse no contact order, the first rule is that no contact with these protected parties. The exception is to the exception of, or the rule of not being able to return to a residence.
But you know, interpreting this order based upon canons of construction may be one thing, but when you're dealing with the question of whether or not something is vague or ambiguous for somebody else, for constitutional issues, maybe something else. So I question whether applying the canons of construction are really helpful in, in this situation?
And, Your Honor, I would say that it is, based on the fact that Judge Quinn in this case specifically stated because there was the rule of having no contact, he didn't need to analyze the domestic abuse no contact order further. The fact that the...
My point is, though, that's what courts would look at.
Correct.
But he's not a judge. He's a person on the street, and so the standard isn't what a judge would look at. The standard is what a person who has to deal with this order would look at.
I understand. Right? I understand your point. Thank you. And I would state that he was very well aware of this no contact order and that it required no contact. He also, as stated in the briefs, he has had them before. He's familiar with them, and he's aware that of the prohibition. I think the language that was written in the exception also further clarifies that the appellant was able to return to the residence if the protected parties no longer resided there. I think it also goes to your point or your questions previously. If protected parties were to show up at his front door, yes, he should shut the door. He knew that he was not to have any contact. Simply residing in his house and never speaking to them, touching them, being in the same room, doesn't say that he never had contact with him. Being in the same house as those protected parties was, in fact, having contact. No idea who let them in, whether he let them in, but he was aware, being in the same room as them when law enforcement arrived, that they were, in fact, there. So I believe that the district court got it correct when it simply stopped at the analysis of saying, you were to have no contact with these people, I'm not going to proceed further. The argument in this case that it was void for vagueness, I don't think is appropriate, simply based on the fact that the first prohibition in this domestic abuse no contact order was to have no contact. That is not vague. The case law, as I cited in my brief, also indicates that the statements of no contact, as found by your honors and also the Supreme Court's, is that no contact is clear, it's unambiguous, and it is not, in fact, vague. This appellant knew these protected parties. There was no confusion as to who they were. He was not confused to not have contact with them. There was some speculation as to whether he was hiding for the warrant or if he was hiding because he had no contact with these people. We don't know if he knew about the warrant. We don't know if he was trying to hide because he was having contact. At no point during that arrest did the appellant state, I thought I could have contact with them because I'm in my home. That argument was never raised by the appellant, nor by him at the arrest, during trial, or in the appeal, besides the fact of the argument that it was vague, this exception. Judge Quinn made the analysis. He had the opportunity to address both of these issues prior to trial. These were motions in limine. He made the analysis. He made a record. Both counsels at trial had quite an ample opportunity of addressing, as you read in the transcripts. And because of the initial domestic abuse no contact order hearings, the appellant had the ability to address, and also pre-trial to readdress whether trial should proceed on that specific Danko with this exception. The appellant had approximately three opportunities to be heard on it. Ample time to discuss. I do not believe that this court needs to further evaluate that domestic abuse no contact order simply based on the no contact being the first provision. The rule that the appellant speaks to was that he was not to have contact with that residence initially. So he was aware not to have contact. Then when it was amended, it specifically stated you can return to reside, but you can't have contact still. I don't believe I need to take up any more of your time. I appreciate if you don't have any questions. I ask that this court uphold the district court's ruling, the district court's analysis, and also the jury verdict in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gardner.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. I don't have much to add either in this case other than that, again, the court's familiar with Dankos in general and how certain prohibitions can be unilaterally lifted, like prescription from going to a residence, and then once the protected parties move out, you lift it. I mean, we're also not in that situation because it specifically says right to reside. It's his home. So no judge needs to give him any right to reside there. He's got that property right to reside in his home. And if the district court had simply lifted the restriction on returning to that address, this also wouldn't be an argument. But again, it's the lack of guidance, the almost having to guess that's involved when you do have this language that seems to be giving somebody an affirmative right, a right to reside there regardless of the no-contact order.
Well, actually, I want to talk about that because I'm looking at the language utilized in the Danko, and it says, defendant may return to reside at the address at 6 a.m. on Monday, December 19, unless protected person contacts Princeton Police Department prior to that time and indicates she's no longer residing at the residence. And I think any reasonable person would read that to mean that he could actually have gone back to the residence even earlier on the assumption she no longer resided there. So doesn't that in and of itself indicate the intent of the court that he continued to have no contact with her even in the home?
I wouldn't read that as even in the home. That was just a timing provision to where he would, again, gain the right to reside at that residence, like, despite the issuance of the no contact order.
But he can't even go to his own home unless she's out. I mean, that's how I read that. And doesn't that seem to be, you have to read that in the context of the no contact order? That he's to have no contact with her.
You do, but I think you can ascribe a little bit too much intent to that language. Like it does, I don't think it operates as when the case law talks about providing sufficient guidance to people so that they can be confident in knowing they're interpreting something the correct way. Like reading that on its face is that he gets to return to reside no later than December 19th. If the protected parties vacate the residence prior to that, that right to reside just kicks in that much sooner. And I mean, there are many cases where the protected parties share a home with the individual subject to the Danko, and the person subject to the Danko needs to live in a hotel. And there's nothing in the order that says anything about right to reside in a hotel or at a friend's house. And if the protected parties showed up at that hotel, they would have to leave. But again, you've got that right that's more than just the right, I own this home, I get to live here. It's that specifically he's looking at this thinking, or anybody's looking at this thinking, may return to reside. Like, that's my safe place. I don't have to think about the protected party initiating contact with me when I'm at the place that I have the right to reside. And in this case, it wasn't that. And we don't have some of the sticky situations, like what if they do show up at the door, or what if they use their keys and they're at home when he gets home after a weekend of working, and how does that interplay? We've just got the situation where it's a legal question. It's, would a person of common intelligence have the ability to read this in a way that says, when I'm in my own home, as long as I'm not initiating contact, I'm complying with the judge's order. Judge said, I get to live here now. The judge kicked me out originally, said I get to come back, this is where I get to be. And that's where the vagueness comes in, where there's not that extra bit of guidance, and that's what makes it unconstitutional. So we are asking that this court reverse the conviction on due process grounds. Thank you.
Thank you to both parties for appearing today and making argument in support of your briefs and on your party's behalf. At this time, the matter is submitted. A decision will be issued in the statutory time frame. This court will be in recess pending our later hearings.